every artist really creates work that they hope somebody will enjoy in their home. But then they're often shown in this very revered way, just on a white wall with one spotlight. So that it, without realizing it, I probably had to set a new way of thinking for a lot of museums.
Says fashion designer Paul Smith, who a little more than 50 years ago opened a little boutique in London selling his own designs and others, and art too. Art from the beginning of his career played a big role. Paul Smith, now your name is loved all over the planet and you continue to light with your fashion. I'm very excited to welcome you today in our Weltkunst podcast, Was macht die Kunst? That loosely translates into What's New in Art, produced in partnership with Volkswagen. This question, What's New in Art, today points us to Paris, because you just opened a show there, Picasso Celebration, at the venerable Musée Picasso, because Picasso died 50 years ago on April 8th, and he left behind a vast trove of paintings, drawings, sculptures that still inspire today, and today also raise questions for a younger generation who is looking at how did Picasso treat women, what role does colonialism play in his art. So it's very important to open the work of Picasso for questions and to open it up for a younger audience. Now, some works we've seen a million times and some works we haven't seen. So I was super surprised when I was at the show what you dug up in this vast collection, because the Picasso Museum alone owns 5,000 works and hundreds of thousands of artifacts. So my first question for you, Paul, is how did you throw yourself into this project?
Well, the project started in November 2018 when Laurent Lebon, the then president of the Picasso Museum in Paris, came to see me in the room where I am now, actually, in London. And we like the way you think about things. We like the way your shops look and your room looks. And we wondered whether you'd be happy to co-curate and to art director the whole of the museum in 2023 to celebrate their 50th anniversary. So I was completely taken aback and scared and honored and humbled. I said, very honestly, I'm not an art historian. I'm not an expert on Picasso. I know his work, but then I know his Matisse's work and Giacometti's work, etc. So I'm not an expert. Anyway, it went ahead and then, of course, COVID arrived. Then I spent 2 years in this room, more or less on my own, going through hundreds and hundreds of artworks from the Picasso archive. I think in total, they've got something like 200,000 things, because obviously one thing could be just one sheet of paper, you know. So, but there's like 50,000 major artworks. That was just absolutely mind-blowing, really. I mean, but luckily there was one or two of the curators in Paris that I got on the phone together with them and said, well, how do we try and put this into some sort of order? Because there's 24 rooms that I've been responsible for. So eventually, after a couple of years, there was the Cubist bit, and then there was the Demoiselle d'Avignon room, and then there was the Blue Period. And so slowly we started to assemble this sort of the rooms, and then the fun started for me when I could make the rooms more odd, interesting, special, humble, whatever. So it was a very big process. Now it's open.
What I found, I would almost say genius, about the show is you expect something a little bit chronological. And of course, chronology in Picasso is super exciting because he had so many different styles and so many ideas over the decades. But not only is it biography through art of Picasso, but I also sense some of your own biography. It starts with bicycle saddles and parts, where Picasso made this amazing sculpture and you picked it up because, of course, you also have a cycling history in your life. So
that's right. Yeah, I mean, it was almost too cliche to use the bull's head, as they call it, the handlebars and the saddle, as the poster and as the first room. But I mean, there was a strong association with me because of my love of cycling. But the main point I wanted to make there was, when going to that room, there's the bull's head by Picasso on the wall facing you. And then you turn around and then there are a selection of modern handlebars and saddles, not put together in the way that Picasso put them. And so my idea there was that you and I look at the handlebars and they're handlebars and they're a saddle, and he looks at them and he sees a bull's head. So it was just right from the very first room to try and say his lateral or odd way of looking at things was just very, very special. And I could draw parallels with that because my father was not a Picasso, but he would always make things just from, he'd make a dog out of a hammer. I mean, I remember being poorly with the flu or something, and suddenly there was a tap at the window on the first floor of a house, and there was a mop going by the window with a hat on and two eyes, you know, and he was trying to cheer me up, age 11, with the flu. And so there was sort of a parallels in a way of looking at everyday things and then them turning into something very special. And then the next room is a little bit more cliche again, because it's 1953, I think it was, when he just decorated the pages of a Vogue magazine. And so luckily I found that in the archive. And so that forms the second room. But then after that, it's really not related to me at all. It's related to the various periods of his career.
You chose Vogue covers from the 50s as a wallpaper. And on top of that, you show drawings that Picasso made on fashion photography. I was actually at the show with my oldest son, and we had a blast looking at these drawings because they are so funny. You have these beautiful silhouettes and these wonderful evening gowns or bridal dresses and these beautiful models. And then Picasso is doodling on them, making the funniest jokes with his short little drawings, like three women that are standing next to each other. Two are looking at the one. He draws a fart under the dress. So that was so funny. And I thought that was a great room to start with, because some people may have thought, why is Paul Smith curating a Picasso show?
Obviously at the top of my worry the whole time, in the fact, you know, why me? And obviously I'm humbled and delighted it was me, but I mean, and still things could happen. You know, there could be criticisms that I haven't seen, but so far, as I said earlier, the reviews have been amazing. And I think in a way, sometimes it's better to have somebody who isn't full of history or knowledge of a particular subject. I remember many years ago, I was flown out to the Apple headquarters in California to talk to the designers. Johnny Ive, the boss there, asked me to go out and talk to his designers. And I said, I don't use a computer and I don't have a computer. And so I think that's exactly the reason I was taken out there, because you can say things that are so open, or you can say, can we do this or can we do that, because you're not cluttered with history or references.
You picked works where Picasso pokes fun at the fashion industry. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, why not? And it's genius. I think it's great that you start with the fashion photography that is being made fun of. It's very entertaining, and I never had the feeling in any of the 24 rooms that you're not taking Picasso serious enough. I think for a museum today, that's a very, very important task. How do you entertain younger audiences with works that are, you know, belong to some kind of classic canon?
Which was, of course, the brief for Laurent Lebon right at the beginning, said, you have carte blanche, you can do whatever you want, which is obviously amazing, that we want to attract a younger audience, a new audience. We want it to, the actual museum itself, to sort of enter the new era. And a lot of the comments have been very interesting with people associated to museums that I met during the process. And they said that it really puts a big question mark over the white cube, you know, the white room with a very precious piece of art on it. Of course, every artist really creates work that they hope somebody will enjoy in their home. But then they're often shown in this very revered way, just on a white wall with one spotlight. So that it, without realizing it, I probably had to set a new way of thinking for a lot of museums. I don't know. I hope so.
You picked various kind of stuffy looking wallpapers for one room with the assemblages and collages. And there was also a very simple sculpture, bronze by Picasso, hanging on the wall of this very old-fashioned, stuffy-looking pattern. And I thought, wow, when you show it like this, the Picasso looks more radical. If I imagine the same sculpture hanging on a white wall, it would be, well, just another sculpture. It shows how radical and how exciting art can be when you show it in a different context like that.
I mean, in my work as a clothes designer, I've always played with sort of contradiction and irreverence and a denim shirt with a very posh cashmere suit. So that's what I tried to do with the exhibition as well. So that particular room you're talking about, which was all very old vintage wallpapers, which I found and then selected them very carefully on the walls. What I also interrupt the rhythm of the visitor. So you go from a very classical hang in a way with the cubism and then into something that really surprises you. And then one thing that very few people will notice, but in the room you've just described, the collage room, that's onto a wooden floor. And then you go straight into the blue period room, and that's intentionally on a very thick carpet. And it was very interesting walking with just one visitor who had heavy shoes on, and you could hear the sound of the floor in the collage room and then going into this very sort of sad room of the blue period and melancholy room. And suddenly there was no, it just went really quiet. The man said to me, "Oh my gosh, I can't hear my feet anymore." And I thought, oh, well, that's good. Somebody noticed it because I planned it, but I think only about eight people. It's a bit subtle, a bit too subtle.
I think one of the favorite rooms of the visitors is the one where you picked the young Paul, the son of Picasso and Olga, your namesake. I mean, these are very famous works. Harlequin costume, one with diamond shapes and one with these pompons. Those are famous images. And I was so delighted to see these images in an absolutely new light because you picked the patterns and made a wall out of each. So I can highly recommend this show to anyone who's listening. The show goes through at the end of August and you have to see it because it's just so wonderful. So you have these blue and yellow diamond shapes, big pattern, and on it you see the little sweet boy Paul in a suit that has this pattern. So it makes sense when you see it.
What I wanted as well is that, as you know, anybody who visits, that's the end of one of the corridors. So if you look from the pink room all the way down the corridor, then you see the Harlequin. And then if you turn around at the Harlequin, you look all the way back, you see the pink room. And I've done two little pieces of theatrical lighting onto the wall of the pink room, which almost points a finger at one of the artworks. And so I was very keen on vistas, on the carrot to take you down the corridor. And I think the interesting thing about the Paul piece, it's very, very well seen. And trying to do the Harlequins painted onto the wall in this very sort of painterly way. I mean, the initial one was too graphic. We started all over again and did it in a more very rough way, I suppose you'd describe it.
And then there comes the transition from one floor to the next, which is also amazing. It's a big ramp, a wide ramp, that you carpeted with your signature stripes. So
yeah, I know, it was a bit cheeky.
it's great. My son and I, we took a lot of pictures on that carpet because it's like a catwalk. And you can go on different levels and you have this amazing perspective that because the stripes are so long, it's like a highway of stripes.
When I went to the museum, you know, when it was empty early in the morning or late at night, and those ramps were always quite tough to know how you still keep people happy and positive because they were just white ramp. The curators were saying to me, they've always been a problem because we're not allowed to paint onto the walls and we can't really do anything. And so I cheekily asked if I could make a special carpet, and they luckily said yes, which was nice.
There was also a great idea to pick paintings that have stripes in them. So you browse through the archives and you...
Hundreds and hundreds of artworks at this table where I'm sitting now. And of course, one of the most difficult things was putting the exhibition together during COVID, not only having visited the museum once. I mean, I've been many times over the years, but once just before when I was asked, and then we couldn't travel anymore. So understanding the height and the volume of the rooms, and then looking online and then seeing the artwork, always the size of a postage stamp, and then, you know, having to really concentrate on the size written underneath, because, you know, there was, for instance, in the bullfighting room, I imagined the painting of the bullfighter being killed by the bull. In my head, it was this big painting, and it was going to be at the end of the vista onto a red gloss wall. And in fact, it was a very small painting. So there were all sorts of very strange things that happened like that. But in room 2.8, second floor, which is the stripes room, as I was looking through on the computer, eventually I suddenly started seeing that there were a lot of very famous artworks, Dora Maar, Maria Theresa, you know, that had stripes in them. And so I just sort of put those on one side in my head. And then the hardest thing in going through the computer is you can't sort of pile them up on the, you have to remember them or do little drawings on envelopes and then go back to them. And of course, those we had to bring in from different parts of the world as well. I've painted vertical stripes. There's five different stripes, different colours, and again made them very sort of, so you could see all the brush strokes and very, very painterly.
This painting of Marie-Thérèse sitting on her upholstered chair, it's so familiar, you know, you've seen it a lot of times, but then to see it new and to concentrate on the stripes on the chair, and then to see it behind this bright painting that you did on the wall, it just is a new perspective. Also, another idea that you noticed, that there were a lot of images of Picasso himself in a striped shirt from Brittany, classical sailor shirt. You did a room with actual shirts hanging from the ceiling, and then you found photographs and even this painting by Sherry Zamba, who's portraying Picasso in a striped shirt and looking at the continent of Africa, because that was such a big influence. But That must have been fun, too, to think, okay, let's find images of Picasso in his typical shirt.
Yeah, there was very nice photographs of him in various locations wearing the shirt, and then 80 real T-shirts floating in the air conditioning above your head. Yeah, and then I picked out the blue from the stripe and then painted the walls of that room in the stripe.
Also a great room with works from Picasso's collection of African masks, and Nigerian artist Obi Okigbo with a painting also including these African artworks. That room leads me to a question that has to do with you, because Picasso was a collector and so are you. I mean, even now seeing you in your studio surrounded by things, how do you collect? I mean, I know the collection is growing like daily. Can you?
Yeah, on the hour. Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about that particular room, it's called Imaginary Journeys. And it's because he didn't really travel that much. I mean, and had wonderful exhibitions, big exhibitions in New York and Los Angeles and around the world, but never really went to the museums or the places where the exhibitions were. But spent a lot of time in the Louvre and, you know, enjoying, you know, on the left bank, there was a lot of beautiful galleries that sold collectible work from around the world. And so that's why I called it Imaginary Journeys. And then in my case, I do travel a lot, and I've always enjoyed just seeing things that have no monetary value, or they're special in some way, with things made from bottle tops or things made from, you know, pieces of old wood. And I don't need any more, but I always still buy things because I just, it's the joy. It's the joy of the creative spirit of the person that actually made it. You know, I'm fascinated by that. And I'm fascinated by toys or by objects that people have just got into their heads that, you know, they've worked out how to make them and how to please people.
Once you showed me a suitcase that you carry with you to boring conferences. Maybe you can tell our listeners what kind of suitcase that is.
Yes, I've been going to Japan for many, many years, and normally about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's then the middle of the night to me, and but they're still saying, "Oh, just finished one more meeting," and so I've got this rather nice suitcase that I brought out many years ago and surprised them all, and it's got a train set inside it. So I said, "I'm too tired and I'm bored. I'm going to play with my train set now," and they were like horrified for, and then the next meeting they came and said, "Where is the train set?" They wanted the train set. So I've always had that humor, and my naughtiness is always, I think I learned that from my father. It's very much about timing. There's definitely the playfulness is really important, and of course being childlike, which I think I'm right in saying Picasso always, you know, aspired to paint with this childlike approach, you know, which is uncluttered with history or education or reference points. And I've certainly always tried to work like that myself.
If you could time travel, what time and where would you go?
I'm pretty at ease where I am, actually. I mean, I think I'd quite like to have a period of time that wasn't to do with the nonsense of social media and the fact that the world is so full of greed, I think is really sad. So I suppose you'd have to go back 50 years or something and hope that it wasn't so full of greed. It's always been full of greed.
What's your most important instrument?
Probably, if I feel in my pocket now, a pen or a pencil.
If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
Faithful dog.
What game do you like to play?
Naughtiness. There isn't a game, but it, you're always being a little bit tongue-in-cheek. You know.
What's your favorite color?
That's difficult for a fashion designer, I think. Yeah, it depends on the season. you could get very, you know, very la-di-da now and say, "Oh my dear, depends on the season. Purple, blue." Yeah.
Do you have a recurring dream?
Yeah, anxiety. You know, it's always trying to get things done. Because I'm the owner of my business and I have about 2,000 staff. And I'm designing clothes, 16 collections a year. Then I get the odd job like the Picasso Museum. So the anxiety is not horrid, it's just getting things done on time, because there's always a deadline.
Do you listen to music while you work?
I do. I mean, I mostly play vinyl. My latest discovery is a man who plays the Leaf.
Which topic would you like to see an entire issue of Weltkunst devoted to?
The Giacometti family are pretty interesting, you know, because of Diego. In the museum in Paris, I mean, the big chandeliers and the furniture is from Diego. But then also the whole family, I think, were painters. So that could be interesting.
Can you share a wisdom?
Every day is a new beginning. If today's a bit sad or you don't feel great, don't worry about it. Tomorrow can be better, for sure.
Thank you, Paul. It was lovely talking to you. And I can only recommend go see the show to everyone who's listening. It's truly amazing. Thank you, Paul.
Bye-bye.
A message from Volkswagen, Culture for All is a key pillar of Volkswagen's cultural engagement. In Berlin, visitors can enjoy free access to Neue Nationalgalerie every Thursday from 4 to 8 p.m. At Hamburger Bahnhof, Volkswagen Group Art for All takes place every first Thursday every month from 4 to 8 p.m.